Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dorothy Gundy and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dorothy Gundy.
Astronomers say the center of our galaxy has plenty of strange supergravity objects. For years, scientists believed that circling the center of galaxies, including our own Milky Way galaxy, were not only stars, but lots of stellar black holes. These are stars that have collapsed, creating gravity so strong even light does not get out. But scientists had yet to find evidence of black holes at the center of the Milky Way until now. Astronomers studying old X-ray observations have found signs of at least 12 black holes in the inner circle of the Milky Way. And since most black holes cannot be found that way, they believe that there are likely thousands of them there. In fact, a study suggests there may be more than 10,000 black holes in the center of our galaxy. The findings appear in the journal Nature. Chuck Haley is an astrophysicist at Columbia University in New York. He was the lead writer of the report. He told the Associated Press, "There's lots of action going on there. The galactic center is a strange place. That's why people like to study it." Scientists already know about a supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way. They call it Sagittarius A. Supermassive black holes are the largest kind of black hole, being between a million and billion times bigger than others. This latest research shows that the newly discovered stellar black holes are in addition to Sagittarius A, and they do in fact circle it. The newly discovered black holes are within about 31 trillion kilometers from the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way. So there is still a lot of empty space and gas among all those black holes. But Haley noted that if you looked at the amount of space around Earth, there would be zero black holes, not thousands. Our planet is part of a spiral arm circling the Milky Way. It is about 9.5 trillion kilometers, or 3,000 light years from its center. In the rest of our galaxy, scientists have only identified about 60 black holes to date, Haley added. Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb was not part of the latest study. He called the findings exciting, but noted that they confirmed what scientists had long expected. The newly confirmed black holes are about 10 times the mass of our sun. In comparison, Sagittarius A has the mass of 4 million suns. The recently discovered black holes are also only the kind that are binary, meaning they are partnered with another star. Black holes partnered with other stars produce large amounts of X-rays as the black holes pull in the star's outer layer. Those X-rays are what astronomers observe. When astronomers look at closer binary black hole systems, they could then compare what is seen with what is too weak to be observed from far away. Using that information, Haley believes that there must be 300 to 500 binary black hole systems. Binary black hole systems are likely only 5% of all black holes, he added. So that means there are really thousands of them. Haley said there are good reasons the Milky Way's black holes are usually in the center of the galaxy. First, their mass most often pulls them to the center. But mostly, the middle of all those stars is the perfect place for black hole formation, with lots of dust and gas. He said it is sort of like a little farm where you have all the right conditions to produce and hold on to a large number of black holes. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
An important part of language learning is trying to find the right words to communicate correctly in every situation. This can be difficult for several reasons. Sometimes a language may not have a comparable word with the exact meaning that you are looking for. Cultural differences and context also affect which words are right to use. And sometimes the way a word looks can trick us. There is a term used to describe words in different languages that have the same spelling or look very similar, but have completely different meanings. The term is false friend. Today, we will discuss some examples of false friends in English and Spanish. To do this, I have invited Alejandro Escalona from Voice of America's Spanish service. Thanks so much for being here, Alejandro.
Brian, a pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
As someone who speaks both English and Spanish, you must have had your own experiences with false friend words.
Oh, yeah. Since I started learning English when I was a little boy in my country, Venezuela, in South America, you start learning of words that you don't even know, at least the way they are spelled. Your tendency is to think that they mean the same thing, and they mean something totally different.
Using false friends can, of course, lead to some very interesting situations, but it can also have funny or even embarrassing results.
Sometimes, yes.
Can you think of some words that might have fooled you and could also trick other people?
Well, for example, when you say in Spanish, constipado, in Spanish it means when you're constipado that you have a cold. That's when you're constipado, but in English it's totally different.
Okay, and the English word that is very similar is the adjective constipated.
In English means that, you know, you can't go to the bathroom.
Yes, and that could lead to all kinds of interesting misunderstandings.
Oh, absolutely. In Spanish, it's only that, you know, you have a cold.
So that one would be considered a very common false friend mistake.
That one and the word embarrassed. Of course, we know what embarrassed is in English, when you are either confused or you feel foolish in public in front of other people. But when you first look at the word embarrassed in English and you're learning English as a second language, it sounds so much like embarazada when a woman becomes pregnant. Because that's what it is. Embarazada is pregnant, a pregnant woman. But it's embarrassed, of course, in English, means only that you're confused.
Right. Another example of a false friend word that can put someone in, and here's the word again, an embarrassing situation. Let's talk about some other ones. There's the English word bizarre, which, as an adjective, means very strange or unusual.
It's used a lot of in English very often compared to Spanish. Because in Spanish, what it means, the word bizarre, is someone who is valiant or brave. But then in English, it's like so odd and so bizarre. Like, remember that song, How Bizarre?
Yes.
How bizarre.
How bizarre. How bizarre.
Let's take another one. The English word educated. As an adjective, it means having some kind of education. In Spanish, what is the word?
When you say that someone is educado, means that he's a gentle person with very good manners, like the description they used to use to describe Clark Kent.
Here's an interesting one, too. The word exit. In America, the word exit can be a verb, meaning the act of leaving a place, or it can also be a noun to describe the opening used to leave a building. So a lot of times you will see the word exit on a sign.
But the word éxito in Spanish means success. So the words sound very much alike, exit and éxito. When someone does something so remarkably well, he has a lot of success at whatever he's attempting to do. So he has success in his life, in his profession.
So it must be difficult for some people to understand why they would see a sign with that meaning in a public place, such as a movie theater.
When you go to the movie theater, oh, this is interesting. In the U.S., they wish you good luck whenever you leave the theater. So it's actually, oh, exit. Okay.
Here's another one that is interesting. The English word library, which is a place where people go to borrow books and study.
Oh, that's a classic as well, library. In Spanish, we have librería. That's like a bookstore where they sell books. And we have biblioteca. It's library in English.
How about the English word salad? This is something you eat, usually made up of lettuce and other vegetables.
The most similar word would be salado. Salado means that it's very salty. Also in Spain, when someone is either salado or salada, but this is only in Spain that I know of, that it means that they have continuous episodes of bad luck.
Uh-huh.
In Spain, yes, oh, that guy or that person is salado, meaning, you really have it rough, my friend. You are salado.
So not something you would want to order in a restaurant.
No. Definitely not.
Another example is the word sensible, an English adjective meaning to do something with good judgment.
Sensibly. The spelling is exactly the same. But in Spanish, when you say that someone is sensible, it's like he or she is very sensitive to something. Okay. Yeah. For whatever reason, maybe a sentimental reason or something that person holds very dear to himself or herself.
Let's also talk about the word actual. In English, this means real or existing in fact. The Spanish word is also spelled exactly the same.
Actual. In Spanish, what it means is present. It's actual, something that is in the present tense. Also, it's when you say that something is up to date. Oh, that's very, it's actual.
So actual is a very good example of a false friend because both words are spelled exactly the same. Both are adjectives, but they have completely different meanings.
Actually, you're right. Yeah.
So, Alejandro, would you have any general tips for people trying to avoid false friends in language learning?
the only way is to become exposed to these words as you learn them, because you understand that even the same words mean different things in different Spanish-speaking countries.
This can also be the case in different English-speaking countries, or even within the United States itself. Different areas use the same words, but they can have very different meanings.
So it's very interesting. Language is like, it never stops. It's a cycle of things that are twirling in your head 24/7 until there's nothing else. Because language at the end is all you have. Your name, Brian, Alejandro here. Those are the things, everything else you lose in life. Material things, right. Money, this and that. But what you learn, no one can take that away from you.
Okay. Thank you again, Alejandro, for joining me today.
Anytime.
Of course, I hope the two of us will be more than just false friends.
I certainly hope so.
So maybe you can return to learning English again in the future for another discussion.
It will be my pleasure, Brian. And thanks again for having me.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. America's 18th president, Ulysses Grant, was elected to his second term in 1872. Grant had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South during the Civil War. He easily won the presidency in 1868 in the first election held after the war. Now he would spend four more years as President of the United States. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about Grant's second term in office.
Grant's first administration was marked by dishonesty and shameful events. The situation grew much worse after he won a second term. Grant himself was not involved directly, but his administration suffered because of his ties to those who were involved. Soon after Grant's re-election, for example, there was a serious incident that involved many of his supporters in Congress. The Union Pacific Railroad Company had helped build a railroad across the American West to California. The cost of building the railroad was very high. The company got large amounts of aid from the government. Not all this aid came honestly. An investigation showed that leading members of Congress and even the vice president received shares of ownership in the company for free or at low cost. In exchange, they voted to use federal money to help build the railroad.
A few months later, members of Congress voted a pay raise for themselves and the executive branch of government. The pay raise would be retroactive. This meant the extra money would be paid for the 2 years already passed. Newspapers and citizens raised a storm of protest. Some lawmakers were afraid they would not be reelected, so they refused to accept the pay raise. Within 6 months, another shameful incident was uncovered. This one involved Jay Cook, one of the richest bankers in the country. He also was a good friend of President Grant. In 1869, Cook began raising money to build another railroad across America's West. He planned to sell $100 million worth of railroad bonds. Many people invested all the money they had in Cook's railroad, but Cook was unable to sell as many bonds as he expected. Soon, his banks had no money left. They could return no money to the thousands of people who had bought railroad bonds.
People hurried to other banks to withdraw their savings. Within hours, many of these other banks had to close. They, too, were out of money. Within a month, more than 5,000 banks across the country failed and closed their doors. This created an economic crisis. The New York Stock Exchange closed for 10 days. Factories closed. Thousands of people lost their jobs. Investigations showed that many of the banks that failed had violated banking laws. The laws often were not enforced because so many bankers had given money to the ruling Republican Party.
Other incidents followed. One of the biggest was called the Whiskey Ring. It involved a group of whiskey producers and some high officials who were friends of President Grant. Together, they found a way not to pay taxes on their whiskey. One of Grant's close advisors was at the center of the incident. A grand jury found him not guilty of any crime. However, it charged several hundred whiskey producers and government officials with illegal activities. President Grant had done nothing illegal, but the Whiskey Ring incident increased public feeling that there was no honesty in the White House. The feeling grew that Grant was a failure.
These incidents took place during a time of intense social and political change in the United States. The period after the Civil War was a time of industrial revolution and business growth. Most of this growth was taking place in the North. Before the Civil War, most businesses were small. Now, there were many companies with large numbers of workers. The companies also had large numbers of owners. They sold shares of ownership to anyone with enough money to buy.
A few men rose to positions of great power in business. In the steel industry, for example, there was Andrew Carnegie. He came to the United States as a boy from Scotland. He took a low-paying job in a factory that produced cotton cloth. He worked hard. In time, he earned enough money to take control of an iron factory. Carnegie soon built another factory. This one produced steel with a new technology. The system worked well. Soon, he was earning more than $1 million a year. He competed fiercely with other steel companies. He pressured railroads to transport his steel for lower prices than his competitors. And he cut his prices to force other steelmakers out of the business. Before long, Andrew Carnegie was the unquestioned leader of America's steel industry. His position gave him great power over the economy of the whole country.
What Carnegie did for the steel industry, John D. Rockefeller did for the oil industry. Oil became a useful product only in the middle of the 1800s. Rockefeller was part of a group of businessmen who built an oil processing center in Ohio. It was so successful that Rockefeller gave up his other business interests. He put all his money into oil production. He formed the Standard Oil Company of Ohio. John D. Rockefeller's new company used the same aggressive business methods as Andrew Carnegie. Rockefeller bought control of other oil processing companies. He started price wars that forced his competitors out of business. Most important, Rockefeller made a secret deal with the railroads. The deal greatly reduced his transportation costs. This permitted him to crush his competition. Before long, he controlled 95% of the oil processing industry in the United States.
As with steel and oil, America's railroads were an extremely important business in the 1800s. In fact, they were the nation's biggest business. They were as important as automobiles and airplanes are to the American economy today. Before the Civil War, most railroads were east of the Mississippi River. Most were small lines. In the years after the war, four major railroads got control of almost all the lines in the east, and they began building new lines in the west.
The first rail line to cross the nation was completed in 1869. It was built by two companies. One company started from the east and went west. The other went in the opposite direction. Finally, after 6 years of back-breaking labor, the two work teams met in northern Utah. They connected the rail lines with a golden spike. It was a great moment in the nation's history. Now, at last, the two coasts of the United States were united by a single line of metal rail. It was like the day 100 years later when the first American walked on the moon.
Like the steel and oil industries, the railroad industry also had its stories of intense business competition. In this case, the most influential man was Cornelius Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt already was rich from the shipping industry. Now, he formed the New York Central Railroad. It was the largest railroad in the East. Cornelius Vanderbilt tried to take over the railroad industry. He was not as successful as Andrew Carnegie with steel, or John D. Rockefeller with oil. A group of other rich railroad owners blocked his plans. But Vanderbilt did succeed in winning a great amount of power and influence.
Vanderbilt and the other new leaders of industry were powerful, and they let others know it. They sometimes made statements about how they did not have to obey the law. Other powerful men thought the same way. Some were officials, elected or appointed to serve in the federal government. Political power blinded them to their responsibility to be honest and fair to the public. As a result, the Republican Party lost public support. The blame was placed on Ulysses Grant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.